It's time for Wolo and Friends on Sports 56, presented by Homer Skelton Hyundai. Here is your host, the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Morning. Good draft Thursday morning. Zach Boyd, quick. What are you watching tonight? Draft or three pretty good NBA games?
NFL draft.
Say, I'm going to peek at the NFL draft. I'm different. The easiest thing of all to catch up on is the draft. Because really all it is talking heads, and then here's the commissioner. And with the first pick in the 2024 NFL draft, the Chicago Bears select Caleb Williams. Okay. That took 3 seconds. Now, I don't mind hearing from Caleb Williams. I'm not waiting 10 or 15 minutes for the next pick. Who most likely is going to be Daniels or May? I think the first three picks are going to be quarterbacks. They say, and we're talking with Russell Copeland about this in a little bit, 19 first-round offensive picks is the record. It's happened 3 times. The last time, I think, was 2009. There could be 20 of the 32 teams. 20 could be offensive. That would be a record. 6 quarterbacks in the first round, that would tie a record. I think it's going to happen. We'll talk with Russell Copeland about all of that. The NBA mentioned 3 games, all series at 2-0. I think Philly and the Knicks probably the most wide open one, Denver and L.A. That'll be a good one to watch. I'm going to be peeking back and forth. I'll watch some of the draft, but for the most part, I think I'm going to be glued to the NBA. Pete Pranica is going to join us in just a few minutes. We will go over all of that. And then Jarvis Greer will join us. Of course, the Tigers are looking for a new AD. Did you see the salary? This is the going rate, I guess. The market price for an AD now. Do you see that Laird Veach is going to get $1.3 million to be the athletic director at Missouri? I think that's more than double the money he was making at Memphis. For, you hate to say this, but probably a less pressure-packed job, an easier job, because you don't have to raise as much money. You're not worried about a stadium. I mean, or trying to get your school into a Power 5 league.
And if I'm not mistaken, the Mizzou's football team is still going to be really good next season.
Yeah, well, they got their quarterback back, and they've got their wide receiver back. They lost their running back. I don't know how many of their offensive line, which is really good, is back. But their pick, look, it's crazy in the SEC now. The good thing is, I think if you finish 5th or 6th in the SEC, you got a darn good shot of still being in the playoff, right?
Yeah.
So that's your goal. I have to look at their schedule. I still think it's probably more East heavy, but they're not going to be better than Georgia, right? They're not going to be, well, they could be as good as Tennessee. But Georgia's clearly going to be on that side. There's no divisions now.
Yeah.
Look, he's had stints there before. It's good for him. And when you look at the money he got, because in all honesty, when I saw that he was going to Missouri, I really never even thought about the cash. I thought, okay, the guy's wanted a Power 5 job. This is the league he played in. He's been at Missouri twice, so he must love Columbia. So, in essence, there is somewhat of this thing that he's going home. So, that's great. But now you see he's making $1.3 million. I don't know cost of living in Columbia, Missouri. I would imagine it's probably around the same as St. Louis, which is probably a little bit more than Memphis. But it ain't Chicago, L.A., New York. I'll tell you that. He's going to live like a king there. It's a good gig for him. But I honestly was stunned when I saw $1.3 million. And that's just the going rate. But wow. Good for him in the long run. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit with Jarvo about that, too. Jarvo was quoted in the column Mark Giannotto wrote about the need for a minority to be the athletic director. Honestly, whoever that candidate is, in my estimation, the one prerequisite for me, thinking ahead for the future for Memphis, is I think that guy should have some football chops. I think that that would be helpful, because if you look, Memphis is pretty well positioned. The last two ADs they've had have been football guys. Tom Bowen, first thing he said was, I know how to fix football. And then it was Laird Veach, who's a football guy. Now, I don't want to take anything away from anybody that doesn't have football chops, because they could be great. I'm a big fan of Tim Duncan. He went to Melrose High School. He was on Penny's team with the Tigers. You always kind of want one of your own. No problem with him, but, you know, I think it's helpful to have one, football chops, and two, and he may have this for all I know, but connections to the Power Five, because the end goal for all of this, to uplift your football program with the new stadium and the NIL money and everything else that's going with it, is to position yourself basically for the next round when LSU when Clemson and Florida State end up in a different league. There's going to be openings. There's going to be a Power Four, maybe. And Memphis is hopefully poised for that. I mean, that's important, too. So connections to the Power Five, which all stem around having some football chops, those, to me, would be the most important of the prerequisites that you want in an AD. And if it's a minority candidate, Mark Allnutt might fit that description, who was here, who went to Buffalo, and as far as I know, has done a great job at Buffalo. Now, are there Power 5 connections there? I'm not sure. But we'll talk with Jarvis Greer, who was quoted in the Mark Giannotto column, about all of that. That comes your way, last segment of the show. I'm sitting in the Family Leisure Studios with the Factory Direct Pricing sale still on. Ladies and gentlemen, they still have the newest of the patio furniture in stock with the Factory Direct Pricing. 2024 designs, new materials, last longer, really beautiful stuff. Go see it. You'll get a big savings. If you are interested in pools or in swim spas, how about $1,000 to $5,000 off? That's part of the Factory Direct Pricing sale. All you have to do is go look at it and tell them we sent you. That's Witten Road, I-40, a little bit north. Go see them and say, Wallo sent you for the Factory Direct Pricing sale. Show me the $5,000 savings. They will. I promise. It's special when you go to Family Leisure. Pete Pranica, always on Thursdays, joins us. So nice to chat with you. Did you get a little restful week here now that you are, your season's over? I hate to say it. I was hoping, like everybody else, you'd be working into the summer. Not the case. How are you feeling?
Yeah, it would have been nice to still be working, but, you know, it is what it is. And we'll get ready for the draft and get ready for summer league and see how next season plays out. It certainly should be a lot better than the way this season played out. Certainly, you hope for better health.
Yeah. I listen to this. I'm guaranteeing you, you will never see another year like this.
That's
33 different roster guys in your whole career. You've never seen that.
No, this was an outlier of all outliers. So no, I don't think we'll ever see this again. We better not, anyway.
I'm with you on that one. Let me ask you a little bit about officiating. You've seen all these referees. You have your shtick with the food and in the center and everything else. This year in particular, I have seen more admittance by the office of the league of mistakes made at the end of the game, including in the Philly Knicks
New York game.
Mm-hmm. How would you view, on the whole, for the season, the efficiency of refereeing in the NBA? Bad year, average year, just we take more notice of it now. What's your feeling about the proficiency of officiating in your league?
I think it is very good to excellent, given what we see. Don't even get me started on Major League Baseball, because that's a real dumpster fire. But anyway, what you have in our league is you have a very young staff. You've had guys like Mike Wunderlich, knee injury. Steve Javy, knee injury. Tony Brown passed away from pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
Greg Willard passed away from pancreatic cancer. These are guys who are finals levels officials. And if they had their health, they would still be working. And so as a result, you're having guys that are 5-6 years in the league, and they're working playoff games. Usually it was 8 or 9 years before you would get to work a playoff game. As far as the admission of errors, you know, you can't have it both ways, because some people will say, well, you got to be more transparent. You got to admit your errors. Well, then when you do, you get criticized. But if you stonewall, you get criticized for that too. So it's a very difficult game to officiate. And it's one of those things too. You look at the end of the Philly New York game, and it's like, well, you can't call that at the end of the game. Let the players decide, right? So you have those conflicting viewpoints, or foul should be a foul. I mean, looking at it in real time, I would have thought that there would have been air in the whistle and there would have been a foul.
Yeah. But before that, here's the biggest issue I have, and I don't know if there was an admittance of guilt on this, but according to Nick Nurse, he 3 times tried to get a timeout. How do you not call a timeout?
The explanation of the last 2-minute report was that the ball was loose. Now, you know, when did he say it? John Goble was standing right there. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there. And I will say this. The last 2-minute reports are not reviewed by referees. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're reviewed by an independent agency. And I'm guessing a lot of those people have never worn a whistle. So, you know, it's a little different when you're being graded by people that have never done your job. That's a little bit of an interesting twist of that. Overall, I think the officiating is good. They try desperately to get it right. Do they always get it right? No. Do they admit when they screw it up? Yes. Do they have sleepless nights when they screw it up? Yes. They're still the best basketball officials in the world. You look at European basketball, you certainly look at college basketball, and you understand just how good our officials are. Perfect? No. And Monty McCutcheon, the head of the officials, says we don't strive for perfection because we can't get there. We strive for excellence. And that's what they try to
do.
Fair. And sometimes they fall short.
Yeah. That particular game, there's no doubt in my mind. And you know what? I hate to say it, the LA-Denver game. And I'm not usually a defendant of LeBron, but there was a phantom foul called on him that did have consequence to the outcome of that game. But the bottom line is these are human officials. They will make mistakes. Since you brought it up, what's your complaint with Major League umpires? And I got a good buddy that is one that listens to this show, so...
Okay, well, we got Hunter Wendelstedt throwing Boone out of a game when Boone didn't say anything, okay?
Yeah.
And it was a fan in the stands, and he said, I don't care who said it, you're gone. Well, what kind of sense does that make?
None.
Angel Hernandez is one of the worst
callers
of balls and strikes in the league, and then you had a review for an Angels game yesterday that the game ended with a throw out on an attempt to steal at second base when the runner was clearly safe, they went to the replay center and said he was out. So I think as a whole, there's no worse group of officials at the professional level than Major League Baseball. It's not good.
So if we compared the Big Four, basketball, hockey, baseball, the NFL. The NFL's mm-hmm. had their share of complaints.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that Major League umpires, as the whole, are the worst group of I think they have the strongest union, too. The worst group of professional officials.
Yeah, just the way they run things. You know,
would you like to see
assignments based on seniority rather than merit?
There's definitely a combination of the two on that. Do you want home plate robots like they're doing in the minors?
I think it would at least standardize things a little bit, because you're seeing that there is a great variance. And you know, if somebody's getting on you a little bit, does that change your strike zone ever so slightly? I don't know. It would make it more standardized. And clearly, we have the technology with Hawkeye and things like that now. I think where you see is all the high profile ejections. And it's like, all right, the whole Boone thing was just crazy because he doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
Somebody shouts from the crowd and Wendelstedt throws him out. And he says, "I don't care who said it." Well, come on. That's just wrong. That is something, if you are a professional referee or an umpire, that is absolutely unacceptable.
I do think you're going to get robots calling balls and strikes. You'll have a home plate umpire that will be there to overrule something that he views egregiously wrong by the technology, and he'll also be there to call safe or out at home plate and to interpret things from that particular vantage point. But I think you're going to get robots, and I think umpires know that is eventually going to be the case. All right, let's get back into the NBA. Could you believe the Heat made 23 threes last night at 54%? Eli was breaking it down. I think Keith Smith did the analytics on it. There were like 27 wide-open threes. That means that somebody was not within 6 feet of the open Miami Heat. That's crazy. How could Boston play such poor defense last night? That's wild.
Yeah, I mean, they gave Miami threes. Miami is not a big three-point shooting team. But I really give a lot of credit to Eric Spoelstra, who said last night, he said, "We're just taking the shots they're giving us."
Right.
You know, and maybe Boston's feeling was, look, we'll give them threes. They don't shoot a lot of threes. And if they make a lot of threes, they'll win the game. And so that was a roll of the dice. And Miami was super hot last night. Tyler Hero was fantastic. And, you know, they took advantage of it. You know, Miami, this is the second year they've come out of the play-in to cause some issues in the first round. So, look, I think Eric Spoelstra is a Hall of Fame coach.
Yep.
They've still got decent players. I know they don't have Jimmy Butler, but, you know, Tyler Hero, good player. Bam Adebayo. The other thing about Boston's defense is they let Adebayo get to his sweet spot, which is between the foul line and the dotted line, for that little half-hook floater. You let him get in there, he'll kill you, and he did last night. So it was a combination of Adebayo with those little floaters in the lane and obviously the three-point shots, which, you know, was a Miami postseason record. So, you shoot a postseason record, you're probably gonna beat some people. And, you know, I think it will revive some of the concerns about Boston not being able to close things out. But, you know, I think Boston ultimately wins the series, but it's probably going to come with more angst than the people in Boston would like.
I'm definitely in agreement. I thought Boston was going to run away with this, honestly. And I have the greatest respect for Eric Spoelstra. I think he's maybe the most underrated of the great coaches because, you know, as you say, he's going to end up in the Hall of Fame when it's all said and done. But the game plan by Boston was to let him shoot threes. It's clear. The analytics show that. My question is, when do you go, okay, this isn't working, let's change?
that is a good question. I think Joe Mazzulla will come in for some criticism of that. That is something. When something's not working, when are you brave enough to say, okay, we need to change? And it didn't happen soon enough for Boston and Joe Mazzulla last night.
So now we got three series tied at 1-1. Boston-Milwaukee, Boston-Miami, Milwaukee-Indiana, and the Clippers and Dallas. Of those three, now the home court advantage has been lost. Which of those three series do you think the seed that did not have home court advantage that has now won it will win the series?
I think Indiana has a puncher's chance against Milwaukee. Indiana was great against Milwaukee in the regular season. We don't know when Giannis is coming back. I don't know that there's a timetable for him to come back from the calf strain. So I give Indiana a puncher's chance. And really, the Clipper-Dallas series, that's very much a coin flip as far as that goes. I think either team could win, and I think it might be the most – that might be the first-round series that goes seven games. That'd be my prediction.
What I find intriguing about that is there were several people down the stretch that thought the L.A. Clippers are really the dark horse team because they were playing well together, and it looked like for a minute they're healthy. Between Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, one of those guys is always hurt, as far as I'm concerned. I just don't get the Clippers. I think Dallas is going to end up being the upset winner in that series.
What gives the Clippers the best chance is because you have Kawhi, if he's healthy, with his championship experience. We talked about Eric Spoelstra being a Hall of Fame coach, one of the best, another great under-the-radar head coach, which is crazy because he's won a championship, is Tyronn Lue. Lue has done an outstanding job with that team because when they got James Harden there, they didn't know how in the world that was all going to fit. And yet Ty Lue has figured it out. And so I think what gives them a really good chance is the fact that Ty Lue is such a good coach. Now, if Doncic goes crazy, they're going to be tough to beat. But I think my hope or the reason that I would believe the Clippers would advance would be because of Ty Lue and what he is able to do. He is widely lauded as one of the best in-game adjustment coaches in the NBA. So that's where I give an edge to the Clippers.
You touched on it a little bit before, Milwaukee, Indiana. Without Giannis, and who knows when he's coming back, that's such a major piece. Even Dame scores in the 30s and they can lose a game. And I'm going to tell you, you talk about coaches, that the guy doesn't really, in my mind, get enough respect is Rick Carlisle. If you look at Indy, they lead the league in assists. They always have in the win the other night. They had it was 60 or 70% of the buckets were assisted. Yeah, they always play good defense. I think Rick Carlisle is a great coach. Where would you rate him?
Well, I think he said it for the Hall of Fame as well. You know, I think he's the winningest coach in Dallas history. Had a great run in Detroit and in Indiana prior to this run, mm-hmm. And he's taken an Indiana team that people are like, I don't know about this group. Now, they score a ton. They play at a very fast pace, so sometimes, they give up a ton, which makes them look like they're not good defensively. But they've got a very, very potent offense. And Rick Carlisle is one of those guys who has the cachet, who has had the resume and the pedigree to say, okay, this is the way we're going to play. And he's done a remarkable job with them. He can be a hard guy to play for. But I think players enjoy playing for him. They enjoy the style that he is employing there. And so, it certainly gives Indiana a chance, along with the play of Tyrese Halliburton and Siakam, that gives them a chance to pull the upset. And Milwaukee's got to be thinking about last year when they lost to Miami in the first round.
Right.
So, things are going to get a little tight around the collar for Milwaukee if they don't win game three.
Last thing, five series of 2-0. The two most intriguing are the Knicks and Philly, where Embiid has said we're the better team, we're going to come back and win. Crazy officiating at the end of that game, same as Denver-LA. Do you see any upsets in that the two higher seeds have held home court advantage? I would think the Sixers are the most likely to end up upsetting here. Your breakdown.
I would agree because they do have Joel Embiid. If Kyle Lowry makes that second free throw, maybe we're not even talking about this, and it's a 1-1 series. I think Philadelphia, Nick Nurse is another coach that is very, very good and has championship experience. So I think that's another series potentially that could go down to a seventh game at Madison Square Garden, and wouldn't the networks love that? As far as the others, I think Lakers maybe get a game, maybe two, but Denver is just playing so well right now. Their starting five played more minutes together than any other five-man unit in the NBA this year, and Jokic is as good as it gets. So, you know, not Cleveland, Orlando. I think Orlando maybe gets a game, but I think Cleveland overall, particularly with Donovan Mitchell, I think they're gonna win maybe, probably in five, maybe in six.
He's Pete Pranica. He is the TV voice of the Grizzlies. Thank you so much. You and I are both going to be out next Thursday, so we'll pick this back up in a couple of weeks. Thank you, my friend.
All right. Sounds good, Wolo.
That's Pete Pranica, and he is brought to you in part by Ken Garland, Custom Home Builders. We're on a third generation now. William is in the fold, and you know what you're going to get with Ken Garland Custom Home Builders. Quality, on time, on budget. The job, honestly, it's not done until it is totally complete. Like, they may have fixed it, it's built, you're in, and something goes wrong like a month and a half, 2 months later. Job's not done. Ken, his crew, they'll be there to make sure you are taken care of. Same thing with renovation. Renovation with the innovation, I call it. If you're putting in all the new modern amenities because you don't want to leave where you are, Ken's got the answers. And he'll make sure everything stays working. They are always on the job, too. A lot of contractors, they divvy out what the chores are. And that's it. Not these guys. They're there every day. They're working with the architects. You're going to get, for sure, whatever you need. We got 70 years of expertise. If you go to kengarland.com, you'll see what I'm talking about. And then call Ken or William, 751-1632. It's that easy. 751-1632, whether it's the dream home or the renovation. Ken Garland is the place for you. Back in a minute, we talk NFL draft. It's tonight, and Russell Copeland breaks it down momentarily.
Be sure to follow us at Sports56WHBQ on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube to watch live video of our shows, stay up to date with station events, and have chances to win prizes. Don't miss out on anything that's going on. Follow us at Sports56WHBQ. Now back to Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Presented by Homer Skelton Hyundai. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin. All we hear is
Radio Gaga, Radio Gaga. Oh, the NFL draft is tonight. We got to turn to our expert, former NFL player, former Tiger, currently analyst on the Memphis Showboats broadcast. That would be the one and only Russell Copeland. You excited about tonight, Russell? You know, they say championships are won through defense. You wouldn't know through this draft. They are saying this could be the most offensive-minded draft in history. Three times, last time 2009, 19 offensive players were taken in the first round. They say there could be 20. Do you agree with that? Good morning.
Good morning, Dave. I definitely do. I think when you look at how the National Football League has evolved, it's a passing league, it's a quarterback league. So, you know, I am expecting offensive tackles. I'm expecting wide receivers. I'm expecting quarterbacks. And to be honest, I think six quarterbacks could go in the first 20. Maybe five could go in the first six or seven picks.
Wow.
A lot of offensive tackles because you have to have someone to protect the quarterback. And I think it is a really heavy loaded wide receiver draft. I got six wide receivers possibly going in the first round. I got a possible 11 offensive tackles and perhaps six quarterbacks. So that's around 23. Of course, that's fluid, but I think the number would definitely be 20 or 21.
Wow. So that'll be a record. Six quarterbacks in 1983 were taken in the first round, and that was a pretty famous class. We know Caleb Williams is going one. Who's going two, three, four, five, six? Because it looks like six are going to go.
Well, when I look at number two, the Commanders, I think you get Jaden Williams, the quarterback from LSU, you know, can
Daniels.
Do it all. He can
Jaden
scramble. Jaden Daniels from LSU. I think he goes second. I think where it's fluid at, I think when you look at the Patriots, you may see some type of trade, but I think Drake goes there or J.J. McCarthy goes at three. And then when you look back at eight, I think one of the quarterbacks that don't go at three, J.J. or either Drake would go there. And then coming down, I think at 13 with the Raiders, I think they really like Michael Penix Jr. Mm. And at 19, the Rams may get Bo Nix. So that's kind of how I'm figuring it out. But I think, seriously, the top three will be quarterbacks. And I think it's Caleb. I think it'll be Jaden. And I think it'll either be Drake or J.J. McCarthy at three.
You were talking about offensive linemen, the kid from Alabama, J.C. Latham, Joe Alt from mm-hmm. Notre Dame. There's a center. I don't think he's going to go as high as Latham or Alt, but that's Grant Barton, kid from Duke. Are those the three best offensive linemen? Who else is in there?
I think so. I think Latham, I think he goes to the Chargers at number five. And I think the Titans, they need an offensive line. I think they get the offensive tackle from Notre Dame. I think that's Joe Alt. You know, those are the two that I look at. And you talk about the offensive line, lineman, the center from Duke, he plays both positions. So I got him going in the top 15.
Who do you have as the best defensive guy on the in the draft? Where does he go?
Well, I think you look at Florida State. I think Florida State had a really good edge rusher. Defensive tackle, I look at Byron Murphy, the second from Texas. The edge guy, I think Dallas Turner from Alabama, I think he's right there. So I think when you look at the defensive players, Dave, I think you look at, you know, you got edge. There's going to be a lot of edge rushers mm-hmm. taken, and I think it's going to be a lot of cornerbacks taken. I don't see any safeties in this year's draft. I don't see a whole lot of defensive tackles, but I see a lot of edge rushers, and I see a lot of cornerbacks filling up the middle of the first round toward the end of the first round.
I think if we value positions these days in the 2020s of NFL football, obviously quarterback will always be the most valuable. The second is the guy that protects the left the quarterback, the left tackle, or a tackle, let's put it that way. And then, really, an edge rusher is the third most valuable position. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, we're talking about Florida State. You know, Jared Verse, you know, that could be a fluid pick. You know, I got him going down toward the middle of the first round to the Bengals. But when you look at these picks and you look at trades, you know, it's always a couple of surprises. So once you're picked to go in the top 15, top 20, you could slide up, or you also could be moving back. But absolutely, you have to be to put pressure on the quarterback.
We're going to get a bunch of trades. I saw as many as, let's see, Minnesota, the Chargers, Philly, Buffalo, mm-hmm. the Jets. Five teams could trade. Will we see five trades, or will we see any trades?
Dave, honestly, I think we'll see perhaps maybe three trades in the top 10. You know, you forgot about the Vikings. You talked about the Steelers. There's the Falcons. They're there. They may trade back from number 8, and they may receive number 14 in a 2025 draft pick. New Orleans may move up to that spot to get 8. And you talked about the Jets. They may try to move up to number 4 with the Cardinals and give the Cardinals number 10 and number 11, and also a 2025 second-round pick. So I think you're going to see a lot of pieces moving, but I think you really will see three trades in the top 10 picks.
Our Memphis Tigers did not have a player drafted last year, first time in a long time. This year, it looks like Blake Watson, who had a great pro day, 4.39340. He also had a great East-West Shrine game. Do you think Watson continues the reputation of the Tigers as being running back you?
Absolutely. You know, I think he could slip into the fourth round, and I say slip, but I think he's been able to make himself some money. He really reminds me a lot of Kenny Gainswell and Tony Pollard, more of a Tony Pollard type of guy. You look at him, you know, he's faster than what he looks, and you look at his size. He runs with a lot of quickness and explosiveness. He always falls forward. And if he can go and move up into that fourth round, maybe late third round pick, it's going to be a really big steal. He's a big-time player, and I think he surprised a lot of Memphis fans. Also, he surprised myself as far as his speed. I think we saw that last year when we went to Texas and saw that game in North Texas, the speed that he has, the versatility coming out of the backfield. But I definitely think that he can slip into the fourth round.
Let me switch gears here. Go Showboats. They, by the way, are going to have this wonderful video honoring Reggie White, the greatest defensive lineman I have ever seen, and Pepper Rodgers, who was a character that I had a great deal of affection for and was a mastermind when it comes to coaching. People kind of got lost in his character, didn't realize how smart this guy really and truly was. They'll be honored at the Michigan game. Do you have much recollection of the 85 Showboats, of which those were the two key pieces?
I absolutely. And you talk about the Minister of Defense, you know, Reggie White, 23 and a half sacks. That's a USFL record in a couple of years. But just looking back, Dave, and you look at how star-studded the whole entire league, when you talk about future Hall of Famers, they're Hall of Famers now, Reggie, Jim Kelly, Steve Young, Denver Broncos, great player, Gary Zimmerman. You also had your Heisman Trophy winners, Herschel Walker. You had Mike Rozier, Doug Flutie. And what about the Hall of Fame executives and the coaches when you look at George Allen, you look at Sid Gilman, Bill Polian, and the great Marv Levy? So it was just filled, yes. A lot of Pro Bowlers. You had Lee Corso. You had Jim Mora, Steve Spurrier. And also you look at, had movie star. Burt Reynolds was a minority owner for Tampa Bay Bandits, and you can't forget about Donald Trump, who was owner for the New Jersey Generals. So I remember, that league. Star-studded, a lot of great players. Yeah,
Donald Trump, unfortunately, they picked the wrong guy to be the rep, the owner rep in the courtroom, seriously, because they were trying to portray this as the little guy against the monster NFL to try to really get a merger. And I think had they picked a different guy besides Trump, because Trump was already a billionaire, or at least he claimed to be, it didn't come off as the little guy. And I always thought that really hurt the USFL cause. But that really was great. This is almost must win, right? Michigan 2-2. The Showboats off to a 1-3 surprising start.
A lot of talent on this team. But, the old cliche is, you are what your record is. And being 1-3, I think there's a lot of talent on this team. But this is a must win. Michigan comes in at 2-2. I just think the Showboats team needs to find an identity. Offensively, have to be able to sustain the run, get a running game with that. And defensively, I think they've been playing in spurts. They have to really put together four quarters in order for them to come up with the victory. And I think this is the game to do it. This is a must win. But I think you win this week against Michigan. You're right where you need to be. Of course, you'll have to beat Michigan twice. They're 2-2. And you cannot lose to the other team. You cannot lose to Houston. You have to beat them. You look at Birmingham coming in next week. That's going to be a tough one. So don't know what's going to happen with Birmingham, but you definitely need to win out.
Birmingham
against Houston.
Are they the best team that you've seen?
Yes, they are. All three phases. What Skip Holtz has been able to do, they continue to get quarterbacks. Got two really good quarterbacks now in Martinez and Matt Corral. They play really well. Got a great defensive front. They can run the football, throw the football. They get turnovers on defense. They're really playing on all cylinders.
Yeah, Skip Holtz. I often, obviously, his dad, he's got the genes in his in him. He's been a pretty successful coach wherever he's been, different levels for sure. Mm-hmm. You think he could be an NFL coach?
I think he can, but I don't think he wants to be. Unless someone, empties the truck and offers him a ton of money, I think he would take it. But, he's been successful. He's doing very well in UFL, but I think he does. I think he can be. I think he works really well with quarterbacks. He knows how to run a team and an organization. Who knows? His name may come up in the hat, but I think he's pretty much happy kind of where he is.
Yeah, I remember talking to John DeFilippo before the season began, and he was talking about how he appreciated the UFL lifestyle, is that, you're talking about 10 games a year, and you hope you make the playoffs, but it's not the same year-round grind. It's actually a more comfortable lifestyle as a coach in this league.
Yes, you're getting paid, good money, 200 and some thousand, 300 some thousand, something like that, maybe even more than that. But you talked about the grind in the National Football League. Each and every week, and there's no off days. As soon as your regular season is over with, your playoffs, if you're not in the playoffs, you're getting everyone together, getting prepared for college guys, for the draft, for the combine, after the combine, here comes the draft, that's the draft, you got your rookie. So it never stops. It is a grind. It takes a toll on coaches, that's for sure.
He's Russell Copeland. Thank you, my friend. I know you'll chat with the guys next week. I'm going to be off, but you'll evaluate this draft. It is tonight. We all look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Enjoy your time, Altman.
Thank you. That is Russell Copeland on the National Football League. He's brought to you in part by Southern Security. They love the Tigers, too. They're big supporters of the U of M. And if you're looking to turn a dream into reality, in other words, maybe you're looking to own a new home, Southern Security, they're there to make your home buying journey a literal breeze. They make it so easy. If you contact them today, they'll explore with you the options. They'll secure the financing you need for that dream home. They got a dedicated team ready to assist you every step of the way. They got a variety of terms, 10 to 30 year terms, conventional FHA or VA loans. They always have the lowest rates. That could be on credit cards, that could be on cars, whatever it may be that you need that isn't going to involve financing. They've been doing this for over 70 years. They're getting bigger all the time. They've broken ground on a brand new facility in Collierville. They're your home team credit union, Southern Security. They'll talk to you on the phone, 901-452-7900, or go to southernsecurity.org. We end our Thursday with Jarvis Greer. Jarvo comes your way in a minute.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Presented by Homer Skelton Hyundai. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
I think Jarvis Greer was dancing the last week or two away. He took a little vacay, and in that time period, Mr. Greer, you missed this FedEx NIL incredible deal. Laird Veach has slipped and gone away. $1.3 million he's going to be paid at Missouri. Holy mackerel. You missed the spring football game where, by the way, Seth Hennigan and Mario Anderson looked pretty good. Team speed in the defensive backfield, I thought, was better, too. I know you're playing catch-up. How are you? How was your vacay?
It was wonderful. I must say that the Wi-Fi is really strong in the Dominican. We were able to keep up with all of that while putting our toes in the sand and on the beach. And it was saw a lot of the highlights from the spring game and Mario Anderson. The new Rio for the Tigers is looks like he may be the real deal for Memphis, coming behind a great running back in Blake Watson, who hopefully will get his name called on the NFL draft.
I think he's going to. You know, he had a good East-West Shrine game. I would just talk about that with Russell.
I saw he clocked a 4.39 in his pro day at Memphis,
which is fast. And
which is what you know and. The fact that he can catch the ball out of the backfield and do something with it gives him that extra dimension. Even if he's not like an every down back, he could definitely be a third down guy you could depend on and somebody you can also hand the ball off and you could take it to the house. So I think Blake Watson is in very good position to hear his name called, hopefully on day one, but probably on day two.
He's going to go, I think, somewhere in the fifth to seventh round. If he went fourth, that'd be great.
That'd be awesome, yeah.
And then the Fred Smith FedEx marketing deal, $5 million a year for 5 years. That's big.
That is really something that, you know, it made national news. I mean, while we were out on the beach walking around and my phone dinged and that came up and saw that, it's not just local news. That's made national news. ESPN, Bleacher Report, everybody picked up on that. And that's just another great example of taking care of home for a homegrown company in FedEx and with the Smith family and everybody else. You know, I call it FredEx because Fred Smith has done a whole lot, not just for his own company, but for the city of Memphis and for the University of Memphis. And it's just, which is not his alma mater, by the way. You know, he's one of those smart people.
He's Yale. Yale guy.
Yeah, he's a Yale-y. But, he's taking care of home, and that's, you know, that'll be another statue that'll get erected somewhere.
Well, there's no question. He has...
And I'm waiting for
He's the patriarch of Memphis.
Yeah, you got that right. Patron saint of the Tigers. And, I'll say this. I'm really looking forward to seeing those real bulldozers pull up to Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium here. Not bulldozers, but, you know, some construction equipment. That's supposed to happen start next month.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is real. This is R-E-A-L, folks. It's actually going to happen. Not like the tractor that sat outside the old turf room over there at Memphis for all those years while Tommy West was trying to, you know, begging the administration to help his program out. But they're getting plenty of help now. And, hey, onward and upward.
Well, and the way they're going to redo the stadium was, a lot of this was a Laird Veach vision. I'm not sure it'll all remain the same with the new AD. Could. I don't have any insight, but somebody could come in and go, you know, maybe we want a little different look because I'm going to be leading this thing for the next few years. I don't know that, but you were quoted in a column by Mark Giannato from the Commercial Appeal, who basically was urging that the school hire an African-American to more look like the profile of the school because it is a higher minority school than there is white students or administration, for that matter, as well. You quoted as, I think, in agreement with Giannato on all this. For me, my thing is I want that guy to have football chops, because I think if you look, the last two that have been the ADs here had football backgrounds and some Group of Five background that could help in trying to get a school into what will now be called the Group of Four, the powers that be. Go over your thought process on what you would like to see for the new Memphis AD.
Well, what I said with Mark is in the article, as I said, it not necessarily has to be, you know, a minority hire or someone, you know, could be a female. Who knows? Who knows who's out there? Because I'm sure they're going to vet everybody. I think it would be a bold move for Memphis to name a minority as athletic director. I think that there are several candidates that we all know of and have talked about a lot. Most notably, Mark Allnutt, yep, who is the AD at Buffalo and who was the assistant AD under Tom Bowen here at Memphis when Bowen had helped get football straightened out. And we all know that Allnutt was the guy that smoothed over the rough edges of Bowen with the donors. And because, you know, Tom Bowen was thorn.
Crotchety old guy.
But, you know, and he has both football and basketball experience and has done very well. And he is the only sitting athletic director, I think, that that would be on the University of Memphis radar right now.
Tim Duncan is a sitting
athletic director. Tim Duncan at New Orleans is a sitting athletic director. The only thing about Tim Duncan is he doesn't have football experience. Right. New Orleans does not have a football program. But Tim Duncan is a Memphian. You know, he went to Melrose, I believe, and played with on basketball for the Tigers. So
with Penny,
with Penny. So these are people that are, you know, have extensive knowledge of the university and how things work here in Memphis. And you know, then there's also the guy that the University of Memphis president worked with at Auburn, who is
Alan Green is his name, and he actually worked at the University of Memphis. Although, in all honesty, I don't remember that tenure. But he spent some time at the U of M.
Yeah, and he's now an assistant at Tennessee, so he's got Power Five experience. And one thing I want to say about Laird Veach is a lot of people are that I haven't heard said yet. You know, and I really like Laird. I'm happy for him. He's making some money. He had ties at Missouri before.
Right.
And so, you know, they keep the Rolodex out there. They know who's out there. But I think what really impressed Missouri for Laird Veach is the fact that he fought Missouri when they tried to jump out of the Tigers contract. You know, they had the return game that they had to play in Memphis.
Right.
And football, and they wanted to get out of it. They said, well, you know, this group of five school. What can they do? They can't make us do anything.
Well, they in essence did get out of it, though. They didn't come here. Memphis went to St. Louis.
Well, they didn't come here, but they didn't go back to Missouri. They made them play the game. They played it in they played it in St. Louis, and the Tigers still got $1 million out of it.
They got $1 million.
Almost won the doggone football game.
But let me ask you this, Jarvo. How many, what was that crowd, 40,000?
Something like that, yeah.
How many do you think were wearing black and gold?
It was supposed to be the Tigers' home game, but it was a Missouri crowd.
Yeah, no, it was a Missouri home game.
Yeah, it was a Missouri home game. But there are a lot of Tiger fans who are able to make the trips. A lot easier to get to St. Louis than it is Columbia, I'll tell you that.
They
were still able to keep the game, play the game, and which Memphis needed to have a Power 5 on its schedule, and they got $1 million for it.
That was good.
And like I said, they almost won the doggone football game. So they had a chance to win it at the end.
Well, if Luther Burden hadn't played in that game, we might have won it.
Well, I'm just saying, they took the tee away on the onside kick attempt at the end there. Could have helped Memphis tie the game, and that's like, hey, you're not supposed to be able to do that. But, you know, strange things happen when you're on the road.
No doubt.
But I think that really impressed Missouri that he was able to fight his former school and get $1 million out of them and still get the football game. So they wanted out of it complete.
Right.
So I think that helped. And I think, you know, Lehrer did a lot of heavy lifting, you know, for the next AD to come along here. And whoever it will be will at least has the table set for that person to go forward and have some success.
A lot of good things happened under Laird's watch, including beating the IARP deal, getting the stadium stuff going, getting the deal with the NIL and Fred Smith. A lot of good stuff. There's no question about that.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Jarvo. I appreciate it. I'm going to take a little time off myself now over the next week and a half or so.
Look at Dave. Dave is going to go country hopping, I believe.
I just want to be just like Jarvis Greer when I grow up. That's all.
Well, maybe someday, Dave. Maybe someday.
There you go. Thank you,
There's
my
always
friend.
Hope.
Talk to you in a couple.
Okay.
That's Jarvis Greer. And we appreciate him. He's brought to you by Miramichi. It's golf time, and what do I think? I think memberships. You know Miramichi offers memberships. It's a great way to pay more golf, pay less out of your pocket. Memberships are simple, $300 a month plus tax. That's it. You don't pay any extra for your cart. You do not have to pay for practice or the range balls. Now people are paying for range balls everywhere. Not if you're a member, plus unlimited rounds of golf, priority tee time booking, discounts in the pro shop. There's so many reasons why. Oh, you join a club these days? Because golf is so popular. You got to pay an initiation fee. Not at Miramichi. $300 for one of the most competitive and beautiful golf courses here with great practice facilities. $300 a month. Hurry, though. They've only got a few spots left. Go call Cheryl. Go contact the good folks at Miramichi. I mentioned I'm taking a little time off. I will see you a week from this coming Wednesday. Zach Boyd and Brian Takis will take over for me. You guys do a good job. I'll see you in a little bit. Have a great rest of your week, everybody.